No different from them walking out with my computer and anything else they seized from the guest bedroom. They'll assert that when people live together or stay under the same roof, then anything on the property is fair game. The FBI can't know what's mine, Janet's, or Lucy's if all of it's in the same location. I'm not at all that surprised the FBI might have decided to send Janet's guns to the lab, but her mention of it to Lucy strikes me as a strategic sidestep, a non sequitur, a lawyer speak that is far more deliberate than it might seem. Janet is choosing her words with precision and care, and maybe that simply comes naturally to her when times are stressful, but it strikes me that she's creating a record, as if someone is listening. And someone is. I am. But who else? Then she uses the word criminal. She says that what's happened is criminal, but she doesn't make her meaning clear. Is she referring to what Lucy has done or what the Bureau has? And Lucy's response is that a person's rights are honored only in the breach. Justice won't do us any good if we're dead, she says, and they'll make sure the truth never comes out. If we're murdered, it will have been sanctioned by our own government. Hell yes, it's criminal. They basically have put a hit on us. Technically, legally, I'm sure they haven't, Janet replies. I guarantee you they didn't hire Carrie. They didn't contract with her to hurt Kay last June or kill us. What they've done is far more clever and diabolical. It's an open invitation to commit a violent act, and yes, it's willful negligence. It's a complete disregard for human life, the absolute definition of a depraved heart crime, she adds to my disbelief. It should be criminal, but it's the FBI, Lucy, and there's no accountability unless there is a perceived political obstruction, such as an embarrassment to POTUS. An embarrassment to the President of the United States would have to be a public event. If it's not public, then he can't be embarrassed. I imagine what sort of political obstruction Janet might be thinking about and come up with one right away. Gun control is an acutely polarizing issue in this country, with the majority of Americans literally up in arms over the prospect of losing their Second Amendment right. If it ever came out that our government disarmed citizens who then ended up murdered, the fallout would be significant. Such a horrendous story would bring new energy to the battle over gun control. It would galvanize conservative voters. It would become a raging agenda in the upcoming presidential election. It's so fucked up! No matter the truth about Pakistan, about missing guns, about everything, nothing justifies this, Lucy rants on. There are better ways to handle it. What they're doing is personally vindictive and destructive. There's a child and a dog in this house. What did they ever do to deserve? Well, it's evil, and it isn't even necessary. That depends on who you ask, Janet says. I'm sure to someone it's necessary. To Aaron. Directly, yes, it's necessary to Aaron Loria. But this is higher up than her. It's higher up than Benton. When you're talking about a cover-up of this magnitude, it's at the cabinet level. It's agency directors who get involved in ugly lies and conspiracies, the Watergates, the Benghazi disaster, not to mention making deals with terrorists, exchanging the release of prisoners at Gitmo for a deserter. The U.S. doesn't need any more humiliations, scandals, botched missions, constitutional violations, or casualties. And if the collateral damage is you or me or Desi, if it's all of us, to DOJ, to DOD, to the White House, that's a nothing price to pay as long as the public doesn't know, as long as it never gets out. What she and Lucy are intimating is egregious beyond comprehension. And yet I don't doubt it could happen. Lucy seems to think that Carrie Grethen has been given an assignment, or maybe an invitation is a more accurate way to put it, if she's been recruited to kill Lucy, maybe to kill everyone around her. And make it easy? Let's leave them on 50 isolated acres with no weapons. Let's leave them on a remote estate the FBI has vacated and left wide open for an attack that will be interpreted as random, as the lightning strike of a violent psychopath. But not a lightning strike by Carrie Grethen. I have a strong suspicion the FBI isn't about to acknowledge that she's alive and well. They give every impression to the contrary. She's not officially considered a fugitive. She's not on the 10 most wanted list. Her case isn't active with Interpol. On their website, Carrie has been a black notice for the past 13 years. In the international law enforcement community, it would appear she's considered just as dead today as she was when it was assumed that she went down in a helicopter. "They'll chalk it up to a home invasion," Lucy is saying to Janet, and my chest is tight. "One of those unfortunate things that's related to my having money. Then the attention of the public will move on. Nobody will remember what happened to us or care." My heart is pounding as I stand inside a dead woman's bedroom 15 miles away from Concord, which may as well be a million miles from Lucy's house. I couldn't possibly get there fast enough if Carrie has somehow breached the perimeter, if she's gotten inside and is watching them even as I'm watching all of it. She's stalking her quarry, about to pounce while I'm her audience, it occurs to me horribly. And this is what she's been leading up to, the grand finale. She wants me to see what she does to them. Marino? I don't turn around or give a hint of what's going on inside me. I need you to get on your phone. My voice catches as if I'm a little hoarse, but I'm perfectly steady. I don't sound frantic. What is it? He steps closer. Try Janet. If you can't get her, try Benton, the FBI, the state police. What the hell is it? Are you talking about Carrie? Yes, that's exactly who I mean. I'm concerned she might be inside Lucy and Janet's house, or is about to be inside it. Shit! Why would you— Do it now, Marino. Even better, I'll get some cars from Concord PD ASAP. They can be there in 2 minutes, and I'll try Janet. If there's no response, they should break down the gate, the front door, whatever it takes. Janet and Lucy are okay, but I'm not sure they will be for long. I'm on it. Where are they? Downstairs. The bomb shelter? Yes, but not Desi. I don't see him. They must not be worried if he's not with them, Marino says. And he's right. Why is Desi alone? He's not with them. And yet I've never seen Lucy more worried than she is right now. It doesn't make sense. She and Janet are devoted to him. If anything, they're overly protective. They don't want him to witness what they're doing. That's the obvious answer, but it's not a good enough one. And I hear Marino on his phone as I watch Lucy crazed by panic and rage like a snake at the first metallic touch of the shovel blade. That's what comes to mind as I spy. Another second goes by, then 2, then 10, and she steps on various stone tiles as if they might be loose. She lightly jumps up and down on them. Completely undetectable. You can walk across these tiles all day long like those assholes did, and you can't tell. Lucy jumps again for good measure. She's obsessed with the FBI. She's fixated on outsmarting the feds, and that's not wise. Lucy knows better. Certainly Janet does. And even if they found this, which I knew they wouldn't, they'd still have to go under a certain undetectable area of the metal flooring and dig down about 3 feet for the gun case, Lucy says. I hate to tell you I told you so. I agree they shouldn't have put us in this position, Janet says strangely. It's as if she's disassociating herself from whatever she and Lucy may have done earlier that has caused them to be in this part of the house right now. Janet continues to make comments in a stiff, stilted way, as if she knows someone is listening. But you don't have to do this, she's saying, and I continue to be bothered by the way she sounds and acts. Let's go upstairs, pack up, and get to Kay's. It's subtle, but I see it. Janet is performing. It's as if she's on stage and doesn't want to be, Like a deer in the headlights, it occurs to me. And I wonder if Erin Loria talked to her alone. I wonder what the FBI might have said to Janet while they were searching the property. They might have made a deal with her. If so, it won't be one that has a good payoff for Lucy. I know about such bargains. You can have immunity as long as you throw your own mother under the bus, and my vigilance kicks up another notch. Let's go upstairs, Janet encourages Lucy, but she isn't pushy about it. I don't want you getting into any more trouble. Lucy stares at her incredulously. What's going on with you? I'm not leaving us with no damn way to protect ourselves. We agreed this morning we wouldn't let them do that to us. What's wrong with you? You of all people know what she's like. I never really knew her, Janet says, and I'm stunned. Of course she knew Carrie. Janet knew about their relationship at the time. There have been endless conversations about it since. What's wrong with you? Lucy has her hands on her hips. You sure as hell met her back then. Remember the time we were having lunch in the boardroom and she sat at our table and didn't say one word to you or even look at you? She's angry and accusatory. And the time you and I were talking in my dorm room and she walked in without knocking like she was hoping to catch us. What do you mean you never really knew her? What are you talking about? Lucy is getting more upset. In the ERF, the boardroom, outrunning, in passing, in other words. Janet's voice is flat and disconnected. I'm not sure I'd recognize her. You've seen the photos. I've used computer age progression and showed you what she'd look like today. And besides, you remember her. You'd recognize her. Hell yes, you would. I recognize her behavior. But literally, I've not seen her to, quote, recognize her. Are you being funny? I'm being a lawyer. I'm telling you how I would feel compelled to answer the question of whether I've seen her. Because this isn't a game, Lucy says. And I think I smell it. They lie and say there's no evidence she exists, and you're going to help them out by saying you haven't seen her? I haven't seen her since the late 90s. Not probably. Absolutely, and it's the truth, Janet says, and I'm sure I smell it. I remember the loamy, musky scent. More olfactory fool's gold, and of course I'm not smelling it now, but it wasn't just Lucy. It was Janet, too. When I hugged both of them, it entered my mind that they'd been doing yard work. Until I remembered they don't do yard work. They smelled as if they'd been digging in the soil. Both of them did. Not just Lucy, but also Janet, who was in her scrubs, and I was surprised by her messy hair, her dirty nails, and that she was wearing what essentially are her pajamas. She didn't bother to get dressed this morning. She got out of bed and got busy. She got sweaty and dirty. She didn't clean up before Erin Loria appeared at the front door, and that was deliberate. Janet wanted to look surprised. She wanted to look raided without a moment's advance warning. She intended to look caught, ambushed, and demoralized, but she wasn't really. Neither was Lucy. They knew the FBI was coming. I'm not getting Janet, Marino says behind my back. It goes straight to voicemail. Janet's phone doesn't ring. I'm watching it on her waistband, and the display isn't lighting up the way it should if someone is calling her. I also don't hear it. Marino is trying her number, and her phone is silent. She's not checking it, and I wonder if it was working earlier. The video opened with Janet clipping her phone back on the waistband of her scrubs. What was she doing with it before I started watching, and why doesn't it seem to be working now? Okay, I'm trying again. And I think Janet might have her phone off, or the FBI might have taken it from her. Marino has no idea what I'm seeing. He isn't watching the live feed and can't know that I'm looking at Janet and her phone even as he's trying to call her. She may have the ringer off, or the battery could be dead, but the FBI doesn't have her phone, I say to Marino, because I'm looking at it. Are the police en route? They sure as hell should be. Let me check. Don't push me away, Janet is saying to Lucy. Don't act like I'm the enemy. That's what they want. That's especially what Aaron wants. Come on, let's go back upstairs. She pulls Lucy by the hand, but she won't budge. We'll get a few things and go to Kay's house. Come on, we'll get there and have a drink and a nice dinner and everything will be better, says Lucy's partner, her lover, her soulmate, colleague, and best friend. They've been each other's best everything, on and off since the beginning of their FBI careers when they first met at Quantico. For a number of years, they lived together. And I've always thought Janet is wonderful for Lucy. Ideal, maybe perfect. They have much in common and are similarly motivated and trained. But Janet is more flexible and easygoing. She's as patient and deliberate as the Sphinx, she likes to say, and she's bright and grounded. She's not an impulsive or angry person and doesn't seem to have a lot to prove. I was distraught when they broke up, but time heals as it passes, and about a decade did. Then Janet came back. I don't know how it happened exactly, only what I've been told and that it seemed a miracle. I suppose it still does. And I think back to when Lucy ordered her to move out not all that long ago. The spring, I think. And how cruel that must have been. It was about the same time Janet learned her sister was dying. And in the blink of an eye, it must have seemed that everything was lost. It would be a hard thing to forgive. I understand Lucy's fear that Carrie would target Janet and Desi, but I also believe what Lucy decided to do about it was hurtful and unfair. Janet has let it go, just as she's let so many things go. Sometimes I halfway wonder if she's a saint. I told you not to follow me down here. Lucy walks to a workbench. Everything isn't going to be better, but it's also not going to get as bad as it could. Go upstairs. She opens a drawer. I bet Desi would like some popcorn and a movie. Why don't you put Frozen on again? I'll be right up with a few friends and we'll go, she adds. And friends is a euphemism for guns. Lucy has hidden weapons from the FBI. She's fighting for her life, for what in her mind is everybody's life, while Janet, in cool contrast, is reluctant and somewhat removed. I sense something else beneath her flat calm. Beneath her unconditional love and loyalty. For a flicker, I feel a wavering of trust. Just as quickly, the feeling is gone. Janet is uncomfortable. Understandably so, I tell myself. If she's acting detached and a little flat and uncooperative, it's to counterbalance Lucy, who at the moment is her polar opposite emotionally. Her fists are loosely clenched. Her entire body is tense as she threatens and curses the federal government. I watch her open more drawers in a workbench that fills an entire wall. I can see a hydraulic lift in the background, and there's a car on it, her Ferrari FF, Tour de France Blue. The all-wheel drive supercar is what she was driving 2 months ago when I was shot. She was talking about it with Jill Donahue earlier today, when they were going over possible alibis for where Lucy was when I almost died. You can't let them dictate how you behave. It doesn't matter what they've done. Janet is firm but calm, and she's something else. Let's go upstairs before it's too late. You don't need to do this. I'd rather be judged by 12 than carried by 6. Lucy means she'd rather be on trial than dead. If we don't have any way to protect ourselves, you know exactly what's going to happen. This is wrong, Janet. It's outrageously disgusting. The FBI wants us murdered. I realize Aaron has set it up that way. Don't give her what she wants. How convenient. If we're dead, then Aaron is rid of her biggest problem in life. That's what she thinks, at any rate. So you know what we do. Let's leave and go to your aunt's house. Let's talk to Benton about it, Janet says. And then it lands hard on me. I realize what I've been picking up. Janet won't look in the direction of any surveillance camera. Lucy, in contrast, is looking wherever she wants, at cameras and away from them. It's obvious to me that she doesn't assume the FBI is spying on them. Lucy clearly doesn't think she's being picked up by her own security system, but Janet is wary and cautious. She avoids looking in the direction of the cameras, and yet she's talking openly, and that's confusing to me. Why would she mention Aaron Loria by name? Why would she mention POTUS, Benghazi, and cover-ups? We can't be emotional. Janet doesn't take her eyes off Lucy. I'll be whatever I want, Lucy says. Wait and see what I do. They can go to hell if they think we're going to be left here with nothing. Not a handgun, not even a damn steak knife. She leaves us here like this so we can't protect ourselves or Desi or even Jet Ranger against the worst dirtbag imaginable. And they know her. They sure as hell do because they created her. The feds created Carrie Grethen like Frankenstein. Marino said that earlier. And he was quoting Lucy. She walks over to the area of flooring she was jumping on a few minutes ago. Metal rings against stone as she sets down a pry bar and a small shovel. She pulls her gray t-shirt over her head, balls it up, and drops it on top of the workbench. She's sinewy and strong in her sports bra and running shorts, and I feel her raw vulnerability as I wonder where the cops are. Have you heard from the Concord police? I ask Marino. Are they there yet? Chapter 41. The muscles of her shoulders and upper arms flex as she finds a folded tarp and opens it near the area of flooring she was jumping on a few minutes ago. I'm reminded of how supremely fit and disciplined Lucy is. She rarely drinks alcohol. She's vegan. She runs and works out daily with weights and TRX bands. I catch a glimpse of the small dragonfly on her flat lower abdomen and think about what the whimsical tattoo hides. Carrie scarred her. Carrie marked her for life. Carrie might be inside the house. She could be no more than a room or two away. Lucy and Janet have no idea, and I can't reach them. I've not heard shit. Marino answers my question about the Concord police. Let me try my guy there again. I'm not intimate with every nook and cranny inside the house Lucy built after we relocated to Massachusetts some 5 years ago, but I'm familiar with where she and Janet are right now, and know that the entire area is monitored by surveillance devices. Lucy is technically sophisticated and meticulous. So is Janet. It was only months ago they began talking about adopting Desi and upgrading the security system. Really? Lucy puts on a pair of thick leather work gloves. They come in here and do this, and we're not supposed to have any recourse. She picks up the pry bar. Talk about an unfair fight. There are no words for how unfair this is, Janet says. The courts is going to be planted somewhere around here. You know that, right? Did Aaron say something that made you think she was planning evidence? She wanted me to think it and start packing my bags for going down the river. Where would she have hidden it? Maybe out there in the woods where somebody's been, but the cameras aren't picking up anything, Lucy says. Maybe it's buried out there like Blackbeard's treasure, so the FBI can magically dig it up and send me to prison. Maybe Carrie was out there in the woods, watching Aaron hide the damn thing. That would almost be funny. When, for a fact, did you ever see Aaron with the MP5K? I didn't see it, and wouldn't have known about it, but Carrie had to brag. She just couldn't resist rubbing it in. So it's what Carrie said, as opposed to what you saw. Janet is a lawyer. But I wouldn't expect her to sound like one during a supposed private moment with her partner. She'll make it look like I had it all along when in fact she did. Lucy is talking about Carrie stealing the machine gun I saw slung around her neck in the first video. She restored it to its original condition, turned it into a deadly little Valentine on February 14th, 1998, for her vapid former beauty queen. And then, 9 years later, and we know what happened. Aaron didn't come right out and say that to you. Janet seems to be building a case. She said enough for me to get the drift. And of course she didn't record the conversation. They never do. Did you ever see Aaron with the machine gun in question? Think hard, Lucy. No. After I told Carrie to stay away from me, she bragged. She claimed she got the MP5K back into working order and that she taught Aaron how to shoot it, clean it, that sort of thing. That was her Valentine's Day present. A day on the range with a dangerous weapon, and Aaron was such a damn ditz. She couldn't even reload a damn pistol magazine. She couldn't push the cartridges down unless she used a speed loader or had someone load it for her. I can't imagine her shooting a machine gun. But she did. Carrie taught her how to shoot a gun that Aaron now claims came from you. In other words, Aaron is lying, and she's planting evidence. Janet is open and bold about Aaron Loria, and it's deliberate, but I don't think Lucy has caught on. That's what Carrie said at the time, Lucy replies. And I have no doubt that Janet has seen the depraved heart videos. Aaron was talking about the former Prime Minister of Pakistan being assassinated. I knew exactly who she meant. Who else could it be? And that can mean only one thing. Carrie's talking to the damn FBI. She's talking to Aaron. She may have turned over the MP5K to her, for that matter, possibly recently. And then, suddenly, frag from a bullet magically matches. Janet makes her next comment a matter of record. A damning record, depending on who she's targeting. Why was the comparison even made? Especially now. It's the very sort of thing Carrie would orchestrate. If nothing else, all she has to do is tamper with various databases, such as the NSA, the FBI, Interpol, whatever strikes her fancy. She could falsify a forensic report, fake a hit, Lucy says, as I think of what Jill Donahue asked me this morning. She wondered if I'd ever heard of data fiction. And that seems to be what Lucy is describing. She could do that easily. And she also knows people in the intelligence community. Now it's making sense why DOD showed up at your house pretending to be the tax collector, Janet says. And I envisioned the dark man in the cheap suit who claimed to be a revenue officer for the IRS. Carrie re-enters the U.S. finally and makes sure she's gonna drop a bombshell, Lucy says. She hacks into databases and creates political pandemonium. We don't get badges, guns, and nothing fun like that, said the man who introduced himself as Doug Wade. He lied to Jill Donahue and me. Everyone is lying. Carrie finds a way to ensure that frag recovered from the assassination is a match with a machine gun that was once in the custody of the FBI, Lucy says. You realize how long she's been sitting on this? And that's classic, Janet says. It's what she does. She gathers things as they happen and holds on to them for as long as it takes. Then she launches her next attack. The timing's not an accident. Janet stares at Lucy and avoids looking anywhere else. Of course it's not an accident! Suddenly there's a match between the MP5K and bullet frag. Suddenly Aaron Loria transfers to Boston and is chasing you to the gates of hell. Which is what Carrie always threatened. She said, when I reach the gates of hell, don't let them slam me in the ass on my way in, Lucy says. And I hope I'm misunderstanding what she and Janet are implying. They seem to be suggesting that the missing MP5K may have found its way to Pakistan by late December of 2007. The gun could link the United States to the assassination of former Prime Minister Benazir Bhutto. Ultimately, Scotland Yard got involved in the case. I remember it was determined that Bhutto died from blunt force trauma caused by a terrorist attack on her vehicle. Bullet fragments would have been analyzed. They would have been compared with any weapons recovered, and maybe one of them was an unusual machine gun once in the FBI's possession. Benton had it. Then Aaron Loria did, even if only briefly. It would be like Carrie Grethen to make sure the gun creates havoc, especially if the biggest loser is the American government, specifically the Department of Justice. What a terrible thing to do to an FBI agent who's not particularly bright or formidable, and as much as I dislike Aaron Loria, I wouldn't wish that on her. I can only imagine the international outrage. Even the Bureau might suffer damage if it came out that former beauty queen Special Agent Loria, now married to a federal judge, was at one time in possession of a machine gun used in the murder of a former world leader. Maybe she's trying to save her own ass at my niece's expense. If someone has to go, it won't be Aaron Loria. Or that's what she thinks. Carrie has to be talking to someone in government, Lucy is saying. How else would they know about the Kurtz? You're basing this on a few vague questions Aaron asked, Janet replies. That's my impression since I wasn't present. She says it as if she's creating documentation. And I wonder who Janet is really talking to right now. Lucy? Or the FBI? Or is Janet talking to me? Why else would Aaron want to know where I was on December 27th, 2007? She asked me about the machine gun I had, quote, stolen and hidden in my dorm room. So where'd that come from if not from Carrie? Lucy works the curved edge of the pry bar between the edges of two tiles. I can imagine her saying something like that. Aaron asked me what happened to what she called an MP5K prototype, which it wasn't. It was just a very early model, so early it has a single-digit serial number. It would be just like Carrie to let Aaron play around with something long enough to taint her, Janet says. Carrie has created a liability, but not just for Aaron. Also Benton. Lucy doesn't hesitate to say his name. But so far, Janet hasn't so much as alluded to him. I continue to sense she's being careful. She's talking as if she knows the conversation isn't private. Imagine if a gun you'd once had illegally, even if only for a day, was implicated in the assassination of Benazir Bhutto, Janet adds. Even if Carrie's lying and planted false reports, it's still a bad story if it gets out. Forgetting the PR nightmare, Janet says, there's not going to be any statute of limitations loophole in a case like that, and that's exactly why that DOD idiot was here. The FBI is a stalking horse for the DOD, and we've seen our share of cases like that. You think you're doing one thing, when you're really doing something else. Now it's the Pentagon after me, Lucy says, and she sounds more annoyed than anything else. Something is. Janet has yet to look at a camera, or in the direction of one. I can't stop replaying in my mind the first thing I saw when I clicked on this video link. Janet clipped her phone back to the waistband of her scrubs. She'd been doing something with it. Then it didn't seem to work anymore. I called it, and it didn't ring. She activated the surveillance system. Then she turned off her phone, making sure no one could reach her. This is funny, though. Was I right? Lucy pries up another tile. Their ground-penetrating radar in their overkill chopper wasn't going to find anything down here. I hear stone rubbing against stone as she slides tiles out of the way, and then she lifts out three more. Under them are a sheet of steel and a control box of some type. Lucy enters a code and presses a button. An electric motor hums to life. The metal sub-flooring begins to move, to open like a hatch. She drops in the pry bar, the shovel, and they disappear in the void and clatter loudly at the bottom. There's a ladder, and Lucy climbs down into a subterranean hideaway that I've never known about before now. It's like her sound masking boathouse and her cone of silence rock garden. It's like so much I'm finding out. I hear the shovel scraping. Who else is seeing this, or will? It's an incredible thought that Janet might be the one spoofing Lucy's ICE phone number and making sure I'm watching. If only I could talk to Lucy right now. Everything all right? Janet calls down to her. You okay?
Roger that.
Lucy's voice is muffled, and she's out of range inside this secret place where she stashes possessions that are on the warrant but were missed. Lucy knows exactly how federal agents conduct searches. When she puts her mind to it, she can outsmart their every procedure, protocol, and technology. I watch her lifting ammunition boxes up through the opening, setting them on the floor and pushing them to one side. She lifts out a sleek assault rifle with a silvery metallic finish, a Nemo Omen Win Mag 300 that she gently sets on the tarp. This is followed by another one with a different finish on the receiver, and I recognize firearms that Lucy calls deadly works of art. I've shot them before, and I watch her continue to obstruct justice. It doesn't matter that I don't blame her. It's of no consequence that what the FBI is doing to her is an outrage. Her behavior is criminal, and they'd arrest her instantly if they knew, and I watch as she climbs up out of the pit. The motor starts again as she closes the hatch. A buzzer sounds loudly. Someone is at Lucy's front gate. Please, God, let it be the police. Who's there? Janet walks over to a security monitor. Lucy picks up the two assault rifles, lightweight and as precise as a laser beam. They shimmer in shades of silver, copper, and green. I think it's a cop, Janet says. What are the cops doing here? Shit, Lucy says. Now what? I can't make out what's on split screen. It's too far away. Janet touches the display and asks how she can help the person. Next, I hear a man's voice. He sounds familiar. When he starts coughing like a chain smoker, I realize it's the same state trooper who showed up here at the Gilbert House early this morning. I thought he'd gone home sick. I guess he didn't, but it sounds as if he should have. Trooper Vogel. I still don't know his first name.
Who am I speaking to, ma'am?
He coughs again as Janet answers him.
We got a report and want to make sure everything's okay in there.
We're fine, Janet says. What report?
Ma'am, I need you to open the gate. We'd like to come in and just be sure everyone's okay.
Open it, Lucy tells Janet. I'm opening the gate, Janet says to the security monitor.
We'll see you at the front door.
Trooper Vogel says as Lucy uses her foot to shove ammo boxes across the floor to a workbench. Then I see it again. Janet removes her phone from her waistband and types with her thumbs, probably unlocking the keypad. Instantly, my display goes dark. The live streaming stops. When I click on the link again, it's dead. I look up and am shocked to see Benton standing in the bedroom doorway, checking something on his phone, his earpiece winking bright blue. I stare at him, startled and alarmed. I have no idea how long he's been there, or why, or how he got in. They're safe, Kay. Benton is dressed the same way he was when I left the house this morning. Concord PD, the state police, our agents, are on Lucy's property as we speak, or are about to be with additional backup on the way. The police are already inside the house? I don't believe that's possible. They're on the way. He walks in. That's not the same as being with them, physically being with them right this second. You know who we're dealing with, Benton. Lucy, Janet, Desi, Jet Ranger. Everyone's accounted for and safe. His amber eyes are locked on me, and he knows damn well who I mean. Nothing is going to happen to them. How can we be sure of that? Because I'm telling you, Kay. They aren't alone and won't be. He looks alert and unflappable, but I have no doubt he's been through it. This can't have been a good day for him, and I see the hints of stress and fatigue in the messiness of his thick silver hair and the tightness around his eyes and mouth. The suit is one of my favorites. Pearl gray with a very narrow cream stripe, and it's badly wrinkled. His white shirt is wrinkled. Probably from the five-point harness he was wearing inside the helicopter, it occurs to me. We have to make sure they're fine, I persist. She'll want you to think they are, and when everyone is feeling safe, you know what happens. I do know what happens. I know how she thinks, he says. And I realize it's not the FBI that has Chanel Gilbert's house under surveillance. If the Bureau were spying on this place, then Benton would know about it. He wouldn't talk freely. He would talk in an off-tilt, scripted way, the same way Janet has been talking. Or he'd say nothing at all. If anyone is spying, it's Carrie, and I'm fast reaching the point of not caring. She seems to know everything about us anyway. Chapter 42. He shuts the door, and we're alone inside Chanel Gilbert's bedroom. Or someone's bedroom. I can't be sure whose. I know you're upset, Benton says. I can understand how you might feel abandoned and misinformed by me right now. I'm upset? Words I might use are unhappy, confused, concerned, manipulated. I don't want to sound like this. Who was she, Benton? I saw the dive pictures in the library. Who the hell was she? He doesn't say a word. I saw the tactical wetsuit she had on. Black with a chest zipper, and that's what I saw in the video my dive mask took. You and I don't wear chest zippers. Our wetsuits don't have two white stripes on the leg, but it appears hers did, based on what I noticed in the framed photos of her wreck diving in the Bermuda Triangle. Do I need to refresh your memory further? I continue to talk, despite a presumed lack of privacy. I have to know if the person who saved my life in Fort Lauderdale this past June is dead, murdered, probably beaten to death by Carrie. Her dental records have confirmed her identification, I say to Benton, but that doesn't mean anything. Who was she? I understand how things might look, Benton finally answers. Maybe you'd like to tell me who Doug Wade is while we're at it. I'm not sure who you mean. I mean the man I met on Lucy's property, who isn't really with the IRS. He's with the Department of Defense, and DOD wouldn't be involved unless this is more about national security than some trumped-up criminal case against Lucy. We can talk about this later. But I can't imagine why you might think I'm upset. Why should it upset me that I can't trust a damn thing anybody does or says right now? I'm emotional, and that's the last thing I want to be. How did you get in here? Did you take her Range Rover and not tell the police? Or maybe a fake IRS agent took it? Her Range Rover? Benton frowns. The red one that was here earlier and now is gone. I feel tears touch my eyes and I fight them back. But I don't believe the recording device in the silver box is yours. I realize how angry I am, and I need to back off before I lose control. It was too sloppily done, even for the FBI. That was a scare tactic. It's psychological terrorism for us to be working a case like this and worry every second that we're being spied on. You wouldn't wind the clocks. I wouldn't do what? Or leave candles. You wouldn't play a game like that with me. Your colleagues might, but you wouldn't, and you also wouldn't permit it. What game, Kay? There's more than one, Benton. I don't know anything about a silver box. I'm relieved to hear it. I don't care who else does. What candles? Benton asks. You'd have to walk into the living room to notice the scent. I assume they're still there, unless they vanished right under our noses the way the kitchen trash did. New white votive candles that I suspect were recently put there, possibly while we were on Lucy's property and the clocks were wound. Candles scented with my favorite fragrance, Benton, the one you always get for me on my birthday. We didn't do it. We haven't been on this property until now. And you would know that for a fact. You know everything your colleagues are doing. Well, I could tell you a lot of things they might not know that go back a very long time. Dangerous things. He says nothing. He doesn't ask me what dangerous things I might be referring to, and he watches me quietly and glances at his phone. I think I know what's happened, I say to him. And his silence is my answer. He knows about the recordings. He's seen them. Of course, the FBI didn't sneak in here and set up this place with me in mind personally, intimately. I feel myself getting angrier as I get more rattled. Benton, what have you done? Why would they go to all the trouble to find special Italian candles? A current of fear runs through me. They didn't. Kay. But you're not going to share that with me. I'm sure I'll have to find out everything on my own. I have to find out for myself what you know or don't. You're not going to admit it to me if you're to blame for Lucy being raided, for Marino and me being followed by one of your damn helicopters. Are you finished, Kay? I've barely started, Benton. I meant in here. Are you done working in here? Because I'm not leaving unless you're with me. You're not staying here without me. When he's extremely serious and intense, I'm reminded of how tall he is. He seems to tower over me when he leans into a conversation, his strong chin lifted, his keen features predatory like an eagle, a hawk. We don't have much time, he says next. Who else is with you? I told them to drop me off. I was coming in alone. We should go. You told your FBI colleagues that. The ones you were flying with right before the weather turned awful. The ones who were trying to trump up a reason to ruin Lucy's life or possibly even end it. I won't let him forget that unforgivable fact. Your colleagues, who are doing the bidding of the Pentagon, and that's exactly what must be happening. Otherwise, DOD wouldn't show up on Lucy's property, pretending to be the IRS. I say it boldly, because I'm convinced he already knows. We can't get into this now. His face is somber, his eyes intense. We have maybe 15 minutes before they're back with others. The FBI will be all over this house. They've taken charge of the investigation, as Marino and I suspected. I know what happens next. It doesn't matter that I have federal jurisdiction. You can't legislate collaboration, and the FBI isn't exactly known for working and playing well with others. They'll take over this scene, and then they'll take over the evidence. They can do whatever they want. The house hasn't been swept yet, I say to him. We're possibly being monitored, but then why am I the one telling you? I'm glad you did. He says it with dry ice irony. We should probably assume it at every scene these days. I begin stripping the bed, and he doesn't reply. But then you would know that, too. I glance up at him. It's not hard to know something if you're the one who did it. Did what, Kay? But I'm the one who's silent this time, as I carefully fold the pillowcase that turned black in UV light. Paper rattles loudly as I package evidence, and Benton watches. I feel his eyes on me. I sense he's busy with his phone. Another scheme, another manipulation, I can't help but think as I uncap a Sharpie and smell the bright odor of ink. I take off my gloves. I close the scene case and pick it up. Non fare I patti con il diavolo, my father used to say. One thing I was taught when I was growing up, I meet Benton's eyes, is don't make a contract with the devil. The very act of acquiescing will land you in a pit you can't climb out of. Or is it too late? Benton continues to stand in front of the closed door. Judging by the blank look on his face, he has no idea what I'm talking about. But it isn't true. I feel strongly that it isn't. He may not know everything going on, but he knows most of it. He's responsible for some of it at the very least, and I find it remarkable to contemplate the position I find myself in. I can't tell what is Carrie's bad behavior and what is the federal government's or my husband's. Is what too late, Kay? Fenton asks. Whatever you've done, I reply. And that includes the videos I've been watching today, watching against my will, I might add, since I didn't exactly ask for them. Nor has anyone confessed to sending them. And if you know what I'm talking about, and I suspect you do, I add, and the more I allude to the depraved heart videos, the quieter he gets. He knows. Well, I just hope you're sure, Benton, because you're playing with fire. You shouldn't dance Carrie Grethen's dance or get into her dialogue. I hold his stare for a beat and hear distant footsteps in the hallway. What's done is done, and Benton isn't going to listen. I can look at him and tell it's too late to stop whatever he's put into motion. I have evidence rounds to make and cases to check on. I move past him as footsteps in the hallway get closer, and I hear Marino's voice. You can ride with me to the office. Unless you'd rather wait for your colleagues, I say to Benton as I open the door. You need to hold on. Marino is firm, but low-key for him. Ma'am, let me... It's real important they know what you just told me. You're damn right it's important! Amanda Gilbert rolls toward us like a gale, and I almost don't recognize the famous producer. She looks considerably older than her 60-some years. Her dyed red hair is disarrayed around her shoulders, her face haggard, and her eyes dark pools of grief, and something else I try to pin a label on before it's too late. Get out! Her voice trembles as she jabs a finger at me. I want everybody out of my house. I feel her hatred and fury, and they're not what I expect in a scenario like this. She just walked through a foyer spattered with her daughter's blood, and there are no tears, only anger and indignation. The housekeeper, Marino says to Benton and me. There isn't one. What do you mean there isn't one? Not at all, I ask. Then who did Hyde talk to when he first got here this morning? I got no idea, Marino says. Whoever the person is, she knew Chanel. Benton states it as a fact. There's no housekeeper? Did your daughter clean the house herself? I ask Amanda Gilbert this, but it's Marino who answers. Apparently, Chanel hasn't been here since the spring, he says, and she prefers to pick up after herself. Where was she? Benton asks her mother, but I'm convinced he already knows, and it's terrible to think about how badly I've been fooled and for how long. Who the hell are you? She demands, and he tells her. Then he asks, did she have a red Range Rover? Not that I'm aware of. There's one registered in her name. I guess you're not aware of that either. What are you implying? Identity theft? Who notified you about your daughter's death? Benton asks, and he's definitely not implying identity theft. What he's hinting at is spying. The murdered woman might have been Chanel Gilbert, but she was also someone else. Her mother probably has no idea who and what her daughter really was. I found out because she emailed me. Amanda Gilbert jabs her finger at me, and it's not true. The coroner emailed me. A politician, in other words. And I'm supposed to trust a fucking elected official? I certainly didn't send the email, and Bryce swears our office didn't either. I'm actually not a coroner, and I wasn't elected. I wonder if you could let us see the email, I say to her quietly, carefully. She finds it on her phone and shows it to Marino, and when he looks at me, I know the truth. The CFC email has been hacked. Possibly Carrie has hijacked my email account and is in my office database, and if so, that will be ruinous in ways I can't begin to calculate. There can be no other explanation unless Lucy signed on to my email account and sent a message to Amanda Gilbert. I seriously doubt that. There's no reason for Lucy to have known about Chanel's death until news of it appeared on Twitter not so long ago. I try to imagine what Carrie's endgame might be as Benton asks Amanda Gilbert how long she's owned this house, as if he doesn't already know the answer to that, and I feel certain he does. Where has she been? I'm supposed to answer that again? Amanda Gilbert is openly hostile toward each of us, but seems to distrust me the most. Again? Benton watches her carefully, and I suspect the questions he's asking are for our benefit and not his. It's none of your damn business. I have nothing else to say to the fucking FBI. Nothing else, I think. She's talked to one of Benton's colleagues. She's talked to someone, and Benton does us the favor of asking her who. I don't remember the name. You don't remember which agent contacted you? He asks. A man? A woman? Some woman as dumb as a box of hair. Erin Loria. She sounded stupid and southern, Amanda Gilbert says. It would be helpful if you'd tell me what you discussed, Benton says, before Marino has the chance. Well, by all means, let me be helpful. Her voice shakes, her eyes swimming with tears. Chanel is a professional diver and a photojournalist who constantly travels and gets involved in assignments she doesn't talk about. She's more than that if she was in Fort Lauderdale when I was shot. If Chanel is the diver in the video my mask recorded, then she was present at the shipwreck when Carrie almost killed me. The implication is obvious, and I suspect it's the truth. Chanel Gilbert was some sort of operative, possibly working for military intelligence or Homeland Security. Lucy and Janet knew her, and I suspect Benton did too, and what that means is Chanel witnessed the attack. And now she's been murdered. She could have sworn to Carrie's existence and Lucy's innocence, but Chanel Gilbert, or whoever she was, isn't around to tell. Maybe that's why she's dead. This is my damn house, Amanda Gilbert was saying shakily, furiously. I grew up in this damn house. It was my family home. My father sold it after I left for college, and when it went on the market several years ago, I decided to buy it for Chanel and her eventual family. I thought maybe she might settle down and have some peace and quiet, that maybe she'd stop running around and disappearing. What about Bermuda? Marino asks her. I'm wondering if you have a place there. I have a lot of places at my disposal, and Chanel has managed to use all of them as whistle stops. She was hardly ever here. She's not been any place for long, ever since she was discharged from the Navy with PTSD. A disorder she possibly treated with medical marijuana, I suggest. And when she doesn't answer, I add, although based on what I've seen, she didn't get her medication locally. Ma'am, Marino says to her, I know how difficult this is, but you need to help us out by answering our questions. We're supposed to believe your daughter never had a housekeeper, that she tends to straighten up after her own self. Well, let me ask you this. Who was Elsa Mulligan? Who? The lady who said she's your housekeeper, Marino replies. The one who found your daughter's body. I've never heard of any such person. She nails her attention on me, her eyes wild. Who really found her? It wasn't some fictitious housekeeper, that's for damn sure. So who was it? Who was inside this house? She's raised her voice until she's yelling. Carrie has been staying here. There is no damn housekeeper. There is no such damn person. The candles, the spinning wheels, the iron crosses and crystals. I draw her attention to that. Was your daughter superstitious or into the occult? Hell no! Your decorator, for example, didn't place these items in here?
I don't know what items you're even talking about.
You'll see them when you walk into the living room, I reply, and I can't stop thinking about Carrie. The neighbors could have been seeing her for weeks, months, and would have been none the wiser. They wouldn't know the young woman driving the red Range Rover wasn't the owner of the house. Carrie has been helping herself to whatever she wants. That's why there are potpourris and special charms in rooms she inhabited, and I have a hunch about why the pillowcase turned black in ultraviolet light. I've heard of bed linens treated with copper oxide, especially pillowcases. Impregnating a fabric with nanoparticles of copper is supposed to help combat wrinkles and other signs of aging, and there can be no doubt how Carrie feels about her youthful appearance. She's been sleeping in Chanel's bed. Someone's been in and out, according to the neighbors, Marino is saying. We've got reports of the red Range Rover being spotted on the driveway. Who the hell was in it? How dare you? How dare all of you? How could they let you in? She steps closer to me, and I smell alcohol and garlic on her breath. Your niece seduced my daughter. She murdered my beautiful daughter in cold blood, and they let you inside the house? They let you tamper with evidence? She clutches my arm, her grip like iron. Tears flood her bloodshot eyes and spill down her blotchy, puffy face. Do you have any idea what my attorneys will do to you? To Lucy Farinelli? To the entire fucking lot of you? She shrieks as she begins to cry uncontrollably. Chapter 43. I'm aware of my leg as I sit alone inside the SUV Jen Garrett left for me. The ache is as deep as bone. Pain throbs in rhythm with the rain slowly thumping the roof and sliding down the windows. The Ford Explorer is white with the CFC crest, the scales of justice and caduceus in dark blue symbolizing what I'm supposed to represent and fight for, what I'm sworn to uphold and never violate. Justice and do no harm. Yet nothing is just. I want to harm someone. If I were given a polygraph, I would fail if I said I didn't want Carrie Grethen dead. I do. I want her eliminated for good by any means possible. My eyes don't stop moving. My nerves, my pulse have been humming all day like high-voltage power lines. I'm constantly checking the mirrors, my Rohrbach pistol in my lap. As I wait, as I wonder. Maybe it's part of the master plan for me to be driving this next. Maybe it was anticipated, like the truck I selected this morning, and I consider that the SUV may have been tampered with, too. Maybe it will go haywire on the highway or blow to the moon. Maybe that will be next, and the way my time on this planet ends. I'm no longer sure of anything. Not the natural course or progression of events or who's to blame. Is this what's supposed to happen? Is it preordained, or does it just feel that way? Is it Carrie or someone else? Don't doubt your own mind. Then I think about Lucy as stress spikes and arcs like electrical glitches and overloads. What can any of us believe? What's true? Who's to say? I don't know what's been manipulated and schemed with more ugly surprises on the way, and I watch and wait for Marino and Benton. They're inside the house with a mother made berserk by grief.